You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Maria McKinley.
And I'm Doug Storm. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, September 26th, 2016.
There is an ethical responsibility of this university that it take firmly into account the fact that it is indeed effectively killing people.
Scientists and community members speak out at last week's climate march. Hear more in today's WFHB Community Report, coming up later in the show.
Also coming up in the next half hour, we hear from volunteers at the Monroe County History Center. That's on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, these local headlines.
An unusually large group of local government officials are meeting tomorrow to decide whether Monroe County will keep its new public safety income tax. Officials have described tomorrow's meeting as historic because it brings together members of the Bloomington Common Council, the Monroe County Council, the Ellettsville Town Council, and the Steinsville Town Council. All four bodies must vote on whether to keep the 0.25% tax, which is expected to raise about $7 million for local government entities. If no action is taken, the tax will expire at the end of the year. The tax was first passed earlier this year, partly to pay for expenses at the county's 911 dispatch center. But about 70% of the money can be spent on anything that falls under the umbrella of public safety. To a certain degree, the tax has bipartisan support. The chair of the Monroe County Republican Party, William Ellis, says his party supports the implementation of the tax, although he still has questions.
Where I do have opposition, and the party does, is the fact that a good portion of it, it's non-designated to where it's going. Anytime a tax is passed, it should be for a specific need. And it should also plan for the growth of that need. In other words, not just what we need today, but the growth curve. A couple things I think we need to ask is why a lot of it is being allocated after the tax is passed. Everything should be allocated prior. The second concern we do have is why the current tax is not keeping pace with the growth and needs of Monroe County. Are we wasting money somewhere? Are we overexpanding on in areas of public safety that doesn't need it? Do we not have the infrastructure in places where we do need it?
Despite his concerns, Ellis says he believes the money is needed now and he supports the passage of the tax. At the Monroe County Democratic Party, Chairperson Mark Fraley says some members also had some concerns about the tax at first.
You know, the Democratic Party doesn't speak with one voice. We've got, you know, a lot of folks who had some different ideas as to how the tax should be structured and how the services should be arranged. You know, but I think that we've managed to be able to reconcile those differences. And for the most part, elected officials, both Democratic and Republican, seem to be behind this.
The meeting tomorrow about whether to renew the public safety tax begins at 5:30 p.m. It takes place at the Nat U. Hill Room on the third floor of the Monroe County Courthouse. The group will take public comment.
During the past several weeks, local government entities have begun planning for how to spend the new public safety tax money, with the assumption that it will be renewed at tomorrow's meeting. Among those entities is the Monroe County Council. Last week, the council considered requests for funding from the tax. Among those groups requesting tax proceeds were Community Corrections, the Monroe County Prosecutor, and the courts. Community Corrections is expected to receive $390,000 to add security cameras and other security equipment at the Community Corrections building. Also funded was the position of Problem-Solving Court Director, which Chief Probation Officer Linda Brady said was previously funded by a grant.
They're really cutting down on that, the JAG grant, Justice Assistance Grants. We just got the notice for the next JAG that goes out, and they've got it very distinct that it's 4 years maximum. Here's how much you get for a first year. Here's the percent for the second year. And, I mean, they're being very specific that it's 4 years. We had it 12.
Monroe County Prosecutor Chris Gall received funding for a sex crimes deputy, a position only partially funded by grant monies.
Because it's paid for by the Violence Against Women Act, it does not cover cases involving children 11 and younger. And so we're requesting this funding to cover that about 15% of our caseload where that would apply.
By the time Circuit Court Judge Mark Kellums presented his budget for a work release center, over $1 million of the anticipated public safety tax dollars remained undesignated. Judge Kellum said his bare-bones budget was mostly comprised of worker salaries.
We're obviously in great need of community corrections facilities, and so we put together this budget because this one-time opportunity through the local option income tax gives us the possibility of maybe solving a long-term problem.
Kellum said there are plans to study how to develop a work release center.
The judges are proposing that we put together this all-encompassing committee of stakeholders to do a full and complete study of the needs and how best we can solve them with the resources available. And so we were planning on, or we've actually taken steps to establish this committee involving members from the city police, the county sheriff, of course, the probation department, all the county council and commissioners, all the interested parties so that we can come up with the best possible proposal for an option. And that will take a while, of course. This was our best effort at putting together a general estimate of what it would cost to run a work release center. But of course, work release isn't the only component that we're interested in. And so I'm thrilled there's as much money as there is that possibly could be put aside and dedicated to this once we all come to an agreement as to what's the best needs are for our county.
The council agreed to table the discussion, saying the proposed budget would serve as a placeholder while the committee determines what is needed for a work release center and related programs.
Some drivers in downtown Bloomington are learning quickly they need to change their parking habits. In the past few days, stories began circulating online about cars being towed from the former Old National Bank parking lot in the 200 block of East Kirkwood Street. The lot is across the street from the First Christian Church on Kirkwood Avenue. An Old National used to allow parishioners and others to use the lot after hours, but that bank location is now closed and the property was sold to Pavilion Properties, which have begun having cars towed from the lot. The company says they want to keep the lot clear because construction of the 146-room Graduate Hotel is about to begin there. Drivers whose cars are towed must pay $180 to get them back from the tow company.
Starting in the upcoming November election, Indiana voters will have to individually elect at-large county and town council seats. Although the straight party voting will still be an option for other races, voters will have to elect these specific positions individually. Senate Bill 61 was passed earlier this year, putting those changes into law. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Maria McKinley.
And I'm Doug Storm. The organization Reinvest IU held a climate march last week on the Indiana University campus to advocate for the university's divestment from stocks in fossil fuel-related businesses. Marchers and speakers voiced concern not only about IU's investments, but also about the fate of current and future generations enduring climate change. For today's WFHB Community Report, we bring you a selection of speakers from the march as they gathered at the Showalter. We hear from physics professor and climate scientist Ben Brabson, Chief Michael Vargas, who is the founder of the Sacred Nations Cultural Center, and Rhonda Baird with the Center for Sustainability.
Your future is in the hands of partly of the foundation. And what we're doing now is trying to do something about that for your future. So let me suggest a couple of things. The first thing is that you are a lovely group of human beings who deserve a future which is productive, one which is free of pollution of various kinds, including CO2 pollution, and that we need to do something about that here and now. And so what I'm going to suggest as a climate scientist working here is is that we have a problem in front of us. Right now it is about 85 degrees, 86 degrees here, and it is already indeed the last day of summer, almost the first day of winter, and this is bizarre and a little bit out of normal. It turns out that last month, the month of August, was the hottest month ever recorded. Now, that doesn't mean it's the hottest month ever, because, of course, we weren't recording things more than 500 years ago. But it does say something which is really impressive, and that is that the month of August was hotter than the month of July, which is usually the hottest month of the year, and it turns out that that month of August then was substantially hotter than August of last year, or July of last year, or any other month of last year. So this points in a very specific direction. It says something is happening, and we, older folks, are putting on your backs an experiment which you really don't need. It's an experiment in dealing with the physical world in a way which is not only unethical, but one which deserves immediately your response. So what I'm saying is that we old fogies have done something bad to you. What we've done is to continue to ignore the whole problem of CO2, something we've known about for literally 100 years, certainly in detail in the last 30 years. We've known from the IPCC reports for the last 20 years that the business of putting CO2 in the atmosphere is enormously dangerous. It is not only dangerous, but it is eating away at everything that you and I think of as normal. Not to mention the details, I just mentioned one, and that is that if you look at the number of species that are dying off, the rate of dying of species, my biologist friends tell me, is 1,000 times normal. It's not twice as fast, it's 1,000 times normal. Now, what's normal? Well, normal is before we started putting lots of CO2 into the atmosphere, maybe 200 years ago, pre-industrial times. But the point is that 1,000 times more rapid is not something that is sustainable by any measure. Here in Indiana, for example, if you want to grow soybeans and corn, that's very nice, but it turns out that both soybeans and corn don't grow very well in hot temperatures. So the production rate of both corn and soybeans decreases as temperatures rise. So, lovely folks, the problem I'm giving you as an old fogey is one that says that you're going to grow to 11 billion people and I'm going to take away your food. Think about that. So what do we do about that? Well, the first thing you do then is to talk about ethical behavior. And now I am talking indeed to you, President McRobbie, and also to you, lovely foundation people. There is a moral responsibility, there is an ethical responsibility of this university to make sure that it take firmly into account the fact that it is indeed effectively killing people. Let me say that again. You lovely folks at the university in these circumstances are actually creating a circumstance where people are dying because of our actions and your actions. That is, people in Bangladesh who are being flooded, people in the Maldives who are being flooded are dying. They are not simply being inconvenienced. It is the fact that people are indeed not succeeding in successfully advancing their lives. They are simply being wiped out by our behavior here at Indiana University. How so? It turns out that Indiana University is owner, that is, heavy investor in a number of the fossil fuels, including oil and gas, and to some extent coal. And as long as we do that, that means that we are complicit in this business of taking care of the other people on the earth, which we are indeed not doing.
You have a responsibility to be accountable, to be responsible for your actions. Part of that responsibility is remembering who we are. You are the caretakers of this earth. You are the keepers and the custodians of this earth. What would we see according to what is happening now if nothing changes? Where is the course of our actions today going to put us tomorrow? Those that are in power, their time on this planet is less than yours. Their time on this planet will be brief compared to yours. What are they doing with their time? One of the faults of a human being is to be complacent and self-serving. And when we do that, we fall short of our gifts. So the power that be are not letting us change that future. That's where we have to make a stand. That's where we need to be a voice as one, to change things, to make things happen. So speak out, be responsible, make some noise. This is your time. Use your minds, use your imaginations, use the gifts of a human being. Aho, Matakiasa. Aho. To all my relations, thank you.
I am heartened to see you because I started out just like you 20 years ago. And when I started out, I worked with my partner, now husband, and said, if we don't do something as a people, our grandchildren will suffer. And then I became a mother, and I said, if we don't do something now, my children will suffer. And now I look around and I see we are suffering. So I fought against many things and I was angry for a long time. And then I found that there are ways to work with the earth. And to me, this is what permaculture design is about. It has its roots combining science and technology and design, problem solving, but it goes deep into and borrows from and needs to honor the way indigenous peoples around the globe lived for millennia. I get to work with permaculture design, which has three core ethics. First and primary, we have to care for the earth. If we do nothing else, if we do nothing with the rest of the other two ethics, we have to heal Pachamama. We have to repair and work with her systems, observe and honor the water, the air, the plant communities, the animals, and each other. The second ethic is care of people. We take care of each other. We honor people. We respect people and their differences. We love each other, and we're present with each other. And then the third ethic, and this is where IU needs to pay attention, sometimes gets shortened to fair share. So even a five-year-old knows what this means. Everybody gets a fair share. But really what this means is that we have to limit consumption and redistribute surpluses so that we can do the first two, take care of the earth and take care of people. So, thank you. So this is the core of permaculture ethics and permaculture design. And we need IU. And we need each of us in our own lives, in our own communities, in our neighbors, and our towns, and the states that we're from, to all take up these three ethics to take care of the future. Who's with me? All
right. That was Rhonda Baird with the Center for Sustainability, Chief Michael Vargas, founder of the Sacred Nations Cultural Center, and scientist Ben Brabson speaking at a climate march last Wednesday on the Indiana University campus. The organization Reinvest IU held the march to demonstrate against the university's divestment from fossil fuel-related investments and to advocate for action against climate change.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference. Volunteer.
Hi, I'm Sue Sheldon. I've been a volunteer at the Monroe County History Center off and on for about 35 years. Why the History Center? I love history, but I especially enjoy learning more about our local history. Did you know that the first color television was produced in Monroe County, or that Crest toothpaste was developed and tested here? Some of the old Look Mom No Cavities ads were done using local children, now grown up, of course. The glass backboards used in basketball games were created by Bloomington's Nuri Glass Company. These facts are just a few of the things you can learn by going to the History Center, located in the beautifully restored former Carnegie Library at 202 East 6th Street, just one block east of the courthouse. 2016 is Indiana's bicentennial, and we have several ways to celebrate. Events, programs, and exhibits are planned throughout the year to mark this important anniversary for Indiana. For example, there are three exciting bus trips all related to state history. Definitely my favorite activity at the History Center, though, is the annual garage sale extravaganza, which always takes place in June. This year, it will be June 10th and 11th. The sale takes place in the former RCA factory on Patterson Drive and contains over 22,000 square feet of amazing items, which we collect throughout the year. We recently had a donation of several books from one of the former stone carvers in Monroe County. And in those books, they were just marvelous, but this was for the garage sale. And in those books, out dropped some drawings that were done for some of the limestone carvings. There was a lovely, lovely drawing that became part of what is now considered, it's called Laurel Hall. They give weddings. They do weddings up in Indianapolis at Laurel Hall. It used to be the old Fletcher Mansion. It's huge. And this drawing, you can see it in some of the photos taken of the of this home, this mansion. So it was really fun to find these drawings. We're going to not take them, have them at the garage sale. We've decided that they really need to go into our permanent collection at the museum. So we sometimes do that. We'll kind of make those judgment calls. And that was one of the really fun things this year. We've got so many incredible things that have occurred in Monroe County that reverberate throughout the world. One example, Dog and Pony Show, started in Bloomington because of the Gentry Brothers Circus. It was dogs and ponies. And so that term came from Bloomington. The Coexist bumper stickers and t-shirts created by some students at IU. You know, we all know about things like Breaking Away, the Kinsey Institute. There's so many things that we are so well aware of. But then there are those other things where you go, oh my God, I didn't know that came from here. Thanks so much. This is Sue Sheldon encouraging you to go to www.monroehistory.org. Thanks.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organization profile at bloomington.in.gov/volunteer. Now here's a rundown of current volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County.
For the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake, with three ways to express your interest in the arts and culture institutions of Bloomington as a volunteer. Volunteer opportunities at the IU Art Museum are frequently available in the areas of visitor services, gift shop, the administrative offices, special events, gallery tour guides, educational outreach, and curatorial and conservation assistance. Both IU and community volunteers are welcome. If you share an interest in local history, volunteer at the Wiley House Museum to learn about life in the 19th century and gain museum experience in the process. They'll train you to give historically accurate tours of Indiana University's first president, Andrew Wiley. And the Monroe County History Center is looking for volunteers for support with basic office tasks and other duties depending on project deadlines. Office support volunteers sometimes work closely with other staff members as well, including the office manager, volunteer coordinator, and the education and public programs manager. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering. For WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Joe Crawford and Leah Carter, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, our partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Sarah Vaughn.
Activate is produced by Jennifer Brooks, along with the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Sarah Hetrick. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as all other WFHB news programming online at wfhb.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
Stay tuned for Bring It On, our local forum on African American people and culture, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.